Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, we'll talk about the best organic gardening methods on How Homeopathy Helps to Grow Great Gardens, a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck and international expert agrohomeopath Kavi Raj. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, and today is December 22nd, 2010, the day after the eclipse and the winter solstice began, the shortest day of the year, and this is an exciting time for us. It's a holiday time, a seasonal time, and for that reason, we're going to probably take a little break until the end of December and begin fresh with Kavi Raj in January. But in the meantime, we might have some talks and what I'm going to call vlogs or radio blogs about current events and what's happening in the plant world, in our world. You're listening to show number 10 of How Homeopathy Helps Grow Great Gardens. I would also like to remind people that they can go to Blog Talk Radio, click that heart button to favorite this show. You can become a friend or even leave a comment. Just get in touch with us. Let us know that you are listening and you're enjoying the show. There's also a daily homeopath newspaper that goes out online every single day. It's aggregated from many homeopaths around the world who are posting lots of wonderful news blogs about how homeopathy works and just health in general, also about the environment, how to keep the world sustainable. Lots of good articles and great videos on that online newspaper every single day. There are new things posted. Today we're going to basically be talking about genetically modified foods, how that affects us and what's going on in the news. I'd like to start by giving a definition about genetically modified organisms, and I'm going to check also the network. Welcome, Dr. Bruck.
Hello, how are you?
Can you hear me?
Hello,
Dr. Bruck. Dr. Bob, as all of your students call you, I should give a little introduction to you as not only my dear and wonderful husband, the brilliant Renaissance man who knows just about walking encyclopedia. You have been doing research in plants for how many years now? 35 years. Really talking
years.
To the plants, doing lots
plants.
Of research, talking to the plants and learning about the environment, giving the clarion call to the world, to governments and people, testifying before Congress about what it is, what it means to create a sustainable world. And we can use the plants as our canary in the coal mine to tell us what we are doing to our environment. So I wanted to give a little bit of an intro to genetically modified organisms. And just a simple definition of the GMO is an organism whose genetic characteristics have been altered by the insertion of a modified gene or a gene from another organism using the techniques of genetic engineering. And so you could probably give us an example about those tomato plants, those tomato fruits that we're eating.
Well, let me clarify the definition a little further. When we talk about GMOs, what you said is absolutely correct, that it's the process of inserting a, quote, new gene into an already existing natural organism. But it's broken down into two different categories, and I think it's important that we understand those. The first one is simply a GMO that's using a modified gene from that organism. Let's assume that through natural hybridizing, which is something that we've been doing for 7,000 years, knowingly
okay, we're going to get into that. Yeah,
well, okay,
but we have a couple more definitions for that. Okay, go ahead.
All right. Okay, but the point
through
is
natural
is
hybridizing.
That's a natural thing. For example, let's assume that we are growing corn, and we notice that several of our plants actually are more drought tolerant than that of the other plants. By taking the pollen from that plant and hybridizing it with another plant, and then doing genetic engineering and finding out specifically which genes are coding for that drought resistance, that ends up with a genetically modified organism. On the other hand, the more controversial topic that is perhaps the one that I think is creating the most disenchantment around the world are called transgenic plants. What a transgenic plant is where you are taking completely foreign genes. The classic, which has been around since the early 1990s, but has never come to market due to objections, was a Monsanto product called Flavor Saver Tomato. And this particular tomato lasted on the shelf for upwards of 3 weeks rather than going stale and rotting after 1 week. But the way they did it was by taking, believe it or not, flounder slime genes. The slime, the proteinaceous slime on the outside of flounders, took that gene, knocked it out, and inserted it into the tomatoes. So, in fact, the tomato now actually had fish genes in it. This is going on around the world. Basically, when we talk about BT, corn, and soybeans, okay, this is taking a toxin, Bacillus thuringiensis, from a bacterium, and inserting that into the genome of the corn or the soybeans, which, by the way, 80%+ of all the corn and soybeans in the United States are BT corn and soybeans. And what it does is that it creates a natural pesticide in the plant. When a bug bites the plant, it ends up putting it into its gut and dying. So the basically the justification for it is that now we do not have to spray pesticides on the corn and the soybeans in order to get rid of the bugs. But, of course, every grain, every molecule of corn you are now eating contains a gene that codes for a toxin that is not natural. Again, transgenic plants. So I just wanted to be clear of what we were talking about.
Right. And one of the things is we really don't know how many years it will take for us to discover that doing this kind of transgenic technology, it might be knocking out the bug that's going to attack the corn or the soybean by doing something in the gut of that pest. But what is it doing inside of us, especially when people eat corn products every I think we might have another guest in our switchboard. We do. Kavi Araj, our marvelous expert, is joining us today.
Hi, Kavi.
Hey, hello.
Hi,
hey, Kavi. So we're excited to have you with us. We're going to be doing a little bit of definitions of the genetically modified foods, and we're starting already talking about corn and soybean and the fact that there's these transgenic inserted bacterium, and
yes,
which are toxic to
right.
insects, but we do not
BT,
know.
Right.
That's BT, isn't it?
Corn, and so
right.
We do not know absolutely what it's doing to the human population, and this is why I am very questioning today the sudden hyper allergic and sensitivity of so many children and this upcoming generation that is unable to eat certain products without having an allergic reaction or having diarrhea
let me make a comment on that, and then let Kavi talk. But I mean, this of course is the major objection that people, the European Union, is indignant about it. There are many movements in North America that are not happy with it. Indeed, the technology is real, and it, quote-unquote, works to be able to knock out the bugs that would normally infest these plants. The problem is, as you just pointed out, is that by creating a completely new organism, not only are we concerned about the impact on human beings and animals, which, of course, eat that food by the megaton, but also we're concerned about the environment. Because, as we mentioned before, plants naturally send out pollen into the environment and will cross-pollinate naturally. This has been going on since the beginning of time. And the question that comes up, when you are creating a completely new plant with a completely new genome using foreign material, not natural to that genus or species of plant, what are we doing to the natural organisms that are out in the environment? And that still remains, as you just pointed out, to be proven one way or another. You know, naturally, Monsanto and the companies are going to say it's perfectly safe. But it goes, I mean, the analogy that I use is, again, the thing that we see with drugs today. The FDA approves a new drug, and, of course, it looks like it's great because they did a study on 100 people or 200 people in a phase 4 clinical trial. And then 2 or 3 years later, people are dropping dead from the side effects of those drugs, and everybody's running backwards to try to get them off the market. We've seen that with a dozen major pharmaceutical products just during 2010. In transgenic plants and GMOs, we don't have that data yet. So you're absolutely correct in pointing out that.
Yeah, and we can't pull them out either.
That's right. And
once you open Pandora's box, we do not have an ability to take back. You know, what has been unleashed into the environment.
That's correct.
Kavi, I wanted to give you an opportunity to speak, and then I wanted to go ahead and read the definition on the GM foods, okay?
Yes, all right. What you were saying about the corn, yeah? There is corn in almost every product in the United States, and it's called corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup.
Yep.
This is one of the reasons people get obese. And what Rob was saying, you know, the plants cross-pollinate. And we know from admittance of the FDA itself, or actually the USDA, they had approved a pesticide that the scientists had warned about that it was going to kill the bees. And they still approved it, and this is in 93 about, so that has been on the market for 17 years. And Monsanto now has found out with its Roundup Ready soybeans that, the weedicide, the Roundup, doesn't kill the weeds anymore. The weeds become super weeds. And they can't be killed. So now they pay the farmers to spray the product of the competition because that will still get these weeds down.
Wow. I want to say something themselves. So, okay, it backfired. Okay, so now we're going to just give a little bit more information about what genetically modified foods are, GM foods, meat and edible plants, that are radically modified through genetic engineering, which we say GE, not the light bulb. Although humans have genetically modified animal and plants since the beginning of civilization, like Dr. Bob said, they did it through selective breeding, possible only within the same species.
Yes,
through natural
reproduction
over decades or even centuries, genetically engineering techniques can transfer genetic material from any source to another to instantly create utterly different variants. Since
yes.
alien genes are not welcomed by the existing genes, suppressive genetically engineering techniques must be used to force the animal or plant to accept them. So this is something that we're not, maybe people are not aware of. Such artificially mutated foods are a source of unresolved controversy over the uncertainty of their long-term effects and what we've been talking about, the food chains. So just like we are not allowed to eat our fish from the oceans anymore because they're highly toxic, filled with heavy metals and mercury, because the fish, the larger fish, have been eating all the smaller fish and accumulating large quantities of these toxins, so too in the plant world, we are in the food chain, and we are the top of the food chain, right?
Yes.
So that means we're
right.
going to be eating, we're going to be getting the most amount of these metals or pesticides, insecticides, or genetically modified foods.
Yes.
I will wait for comments and then add some more information.
No, the problem. The problem is, of course, that because the genes in the plants also affect us. It more or less cross-pollinates with us. When we eat these things, we get changes in our genes as well. Yeah, and so many things of us can become toxic as well. And if we see that in plants, in the BT cotton plant, for instance, the pollen is toxic. Yeah, and so the honey that
That's
comes
right.
from that is equally toxic. Well, if
right.
the pollen
You're
of a plant
You're talking about
is,
breathing
is,
it?
If the pollen of a plant is toxic, that's the plant sperm, then it could very well be that the same thing would happen to humans.
Uh-huh.
That's correct. Well, let me give some insight also as to what the arguments are. Being a plant pathologist, I'm dealing with these subject matters all the time. Both from the academic point of view and from the corporate point of view. And the justification, let's get into the justification. This has been heavily in the news recently. Syngenta Corporation, which has its national headquarters about 10 miles from where I'm sitting, here in Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, just came out with an announcement not 48 hours ago that they had done significant GMO research on creating corn that was
yes.
extraordinarily drought tolerant.
Yes.
Now, you know, that they're not saying how. That's proprietary, which I understand. Okay?
Yeah, of course.
That's the way we do things in the United States, is that this is all a secret. But they came up with corn that will withstand tremendously more drought stress than the typical types of corn that are on the market right now. Now, of course, they herald that as a breakthrough. And why is it a breakthrough? Because when we take a look at global climate change, when we take a look at a number of the things going on, particularly in the most deprived parts of the world, the tropical areas, sub-Saharan Africa, South America, Central America, where the huge populations are growing, the United States Census came out yesterday, and we found that the United States population has grown at the slowest rate in the past 100 years, okay, over the past decade here. So it's not us we're talking about as much as we are the booming populations in developing countries. And, of course, when drought sets in, quote, these people do not have the technology we herald. And therefore, by giving them genetically modified corn that will withstand drought, we are going to save lives. Now, that is a bit of a cynical way of looking at it. And I've pointed this out in many seminars that I've gone to. We're simply assuming that these poor people do not have the ability to be able to learn how to grow crops, the natural crops, using conservation technologies of low-till and being able to conserve water and mulching and humus and all of the things that we do to be able to grow natural food without chemicals, without genetically modified organisms, and then tell them, now that we have developed this corn, which, by the way, will be proprietary, and the only person you could buy this new drought-resistant corn from is us, and by the way, we threw a knockout gene in there to make sure that the corn, once we give it to you, cannot sprout other than once. In other words, it's sterile,
the product, right,
you get out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Therefore, what we're doing is telling the third world, the most impoverished part of our planet, the 70% of the world's population living on less than a dollar a day, is, hello, we have just saved your lives. We are here to help you. Just use our GMO corn.
Yes,
I find that to be incredibly cynical. Rather than teaching them how to grow corn under more adverse conditions, how to use natural techniques, which we've known about, we simply call that organic gardening, but we know how to do it. We tell them the only way to save your lives with your growing population is to use our GMO corn. I find that not only to be incredibly self-serving, obviously, to the private corporations that are doing it, but just as importantly, they are actually insulting, in the way I look at it, to these people that have evolved for tens of thousands of years in the environment. Indeed, the environment is changing, and instead of telling them how to adapt to that environment, we're going to give them the new, quote, drug, okay, on the market to cure their problems. In this case, that drug is a genetically modified proprietary organism.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I make one statement? That the main thing that you started with is the fact that there is drought around the world, that water is precious, there's a limited amount of fresh, clean water, and when you put into the environment these pesticides and genetically modified organisms and turn their pollen sterile, you are now infecting the water. So the water that perhaps before was potable or drinkable or okay, now you're going to just inundate their water with chemicals also. So that's
Yes and no. We don't know.
Well,
in other words, there's a lot of things we don't know, but we simply make the assumption, just like the FDA always makes the assumption about new drugs, that they're, quote, good. Until you prove that they're bad, you should accept them, rather than using what we environmentalists call the precautionary principle, that indeed, if you're going to do something new, you've got to prove first that it will do no harm before you allow it into the environment. We do not follow that dictum. Apparently, the European Union is.
Okay, Kavi, your turn to talk, and tell us the the aphorism for first do no harm.
Yes. Well, if you don't want to do any harm, then you keep your hands out of the genetic material. Because genetic material, as Robert has already pointed out, is an interactive system. Input equals output. Yeah. So what you put in there will come out. That will be expressed. Yeah. And so by saying, okay, now we make this drought-resistant corn and keep the people stupid so they can't find a solution for themselves, yeah, they also enslave everybody to them. Yeah, it's a form of slavery. You take ours,
yes,
and otherwise you don't eat.
Exactly.
Yeah?
That's what's happening.
Yes, and the real solution we have in homeopathy, because, you know, we say how homeopathy helps grow great gardens. Well, in Australia, for instance, we started out with 1 hectare, and we put silica in the water, because what is the desert? The desert is sand. And what is silica? It is also sand. Like is cured by like. Yeah. And so what we did, we added silica to the water, and we just watered a piece of desert, just sand, nothing else. And 6 weeks later, we came back, and we saw plenty of plants that normally only grow in the rainy season, yeah, They had come out of the ground and they were growing like anything. And we stuck the spade in the ground and it came up wet. And that is 6 weeks later. Yeah. So then we started planting saplings of trees in there. And ultimately, with the help of man and trees, we did 100 hectares. And that is still standing. And it is attracting rain. Yeah. If we speak about drought, what is drought? Drought is the absence of trees. If you look, for instance, at Australia, Australia used to be covered in forest completely,
right.
Yeah, except for two small deserts in the middle. And then the white man came and he started chopping down the trees because he wanted to grow his food, because the food what grows there was eaten by the Aborigines. And that is, for us, it is not that I diet, so to speak, but for the Aborigine it is. And so they started chopping down the trees and starting agriculture, and they could get something out of that earth for 2-3 years. And then they had to cut a new piece. And this is, you know, 200 years ago, that's when it started. Yeah. And so in those days, they didn't have pesticides and artificial fertilizer. Yeah, they did everything with dung. But in Australia, the sand and the water have an equal ionization, so they repel each other. Water always runs off, it doesn't penetrate. And if you give silica, you change that, and then the water penetrates and is kept underground. Yeah, it doesn't evaporate so fast. And so these people, they have chopped down, you know, 85% of all the forest. 15% is left in Australia, and there are still forests the size of Germany. Yeah, so you know, no trees. Well, the Australians have had a drought the last 13 years. The farmers are complaining, yeah, there is no grass. So the cattle farms, which are 1 million acres big, because, you know, otherwise it's not enough to even feed a small herd. Now they have these big herds, and they're all very skinny, and, you know, nothing is growing. And that's all because they've turned it into a desert. And at the rate that we are continuing now, the climate change will become drier and drier.
Right.
Yeah. Why? Because we chop away all the forest. If we chop away all the forest, we will have no rain. Because
right.
There is a forest, the temperature is lower. Yeah. If you are out in the field and it's very hot, you go in the forest and the temperature immediately drops 5 degrees.
Right.
Where the temperature is low, that is a depression area, so to speak. And where there is a depression, that attracts rain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it is
we're learning the water cycle from you. Tell us more about
the latest data coming out of the Amazon, where deforestation is at 2 acres per second, is that rainfall is decreasing in the Amazon basin because there are less forests.
Yes.
The forests transpire, they create the clouds. When you cut it down in order to create hamburger farms and create the 100,000 acre soybean fields they're putting in, you have less transevaporation, which means less water, which means less rain, and all they're doing is postponing the reality that they are going to end up with a desert rather than the most biologically rich and diverse area of the world.
Mm.
Well,
exactly.
Is there a way to? Are we too late? Can we make changes today? Is it possible?
We can, but we have the corporations to move aside first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the corporations.
Do they know that they're harming themselves? That they, you
yeah,
know,
but they,
no,
don't,
no, no.
They
the
don't care. That's
there
the
to
future.
Make money.
Now is profit.
Right.
The
corporations
in the future,
are there to make
the future,
money.
The next generation shall have to deal with that.
Correct. That is the problem.
If they leave the next generation is completely sterile, without potable water, without rich lands to grow food, what are we leaving this generation? I don't think that we have time to wait.
That's
no,
their
we don't.
According to the companies.
We don't. So, you know, but if you take the companies to court for destroying the environment, than the judge will side with the company because the company pays him. Yeah,
right.
Either directly or indirectly. Yeah, they pay they pay him through the government, and if he doesn't do what the corporation say, the government will say, okay, this judge will be fired, and then they appoint somebody else that will do their bidding.
The the best way to clarify that is Forbes magazine, which is the entrepreneurial rich magazine of America, for 2010, just last week, named Monsanto the Corporation of the Year. Okay.
Oh my
Why did they name it the Corporation of the Year? For exactly what Kavi is saying, is are on the cutting edge of genetic engineering. They are claiming that they are going to save the world, and they have a building full of lawyers and marketing people that are beating that drum in order to make people believe that and hence people accept the fact of what they're doing.
I wanted to interject a little something because I don't want this show to be depressive and hopeless and put us in a state that we're not activists. We are activists, and what we say and do does make a difference. And just this week, there is an article from the Des Moines Register saying that the Obama administration is considering geographic limits on where biotech alfalfa can be grown, a restriction that would represent a shift in the government's policy toward genetically engineered crops. And I can give the link for that. Farmers who grow conventional or organic alfalfa went to court. So we are active to block the sales of Monsanto Corporation's biotech alfalfa because of concerns that it would contaminate seed supplies. And so Agricultural Secretary Tom Vilsack, who has been criticized by anti-biotech activists who claim he's too close to Monsanto and other biotech companies,
says
his department needs.
Yeah, he's the former CEO.
He's the former CEO of Monsanto.
That's definitely as close as you can get. And so the question is there another ear reaching? Is another voice or whisper going into one of Obama's ears so that he is truly a man with heart and concern about humans, his own children, his own generation, his whole America, you know, if there's to be this contamination and if he understands what the word slavery means and, you know, all those ifs, maybe there will absolutely become some kind of a shift. So I want people to be positive, even though there's a lot of this other kind of news out there. The other bit of news... Yes, do you want something to say?
The best bit of news is, of course, that we have homeopathy to change it all. Because
thank
genetic engineering also happens with homeopathy. Yeah?
Wow. That's a big statement, Kavi. I agree
with
you.
Well, you see, if you give the remedy to seven generations of plants, that, you know, that are self-seeding plants, not the Monsanto bit, then... You see after seven generations that plants in general are much stronger and hardly need any remedies. Yeah, so you have changed it. And genetic, as I said, the genetic material is interactive. If what you put in will come out. There is no doubt about it. The whole body works like that.
Okay, so here you're saying something very, very important. And I want to understand a little bit of something because you're saying seven generations, whether it's whatever the organism is, we may not see seven generations of human beings, but we can see seven generations of organisms that have a very short lifespan, right? So do we have this information that you're saying that you have done experiments and planted seven generations on a property and seen actual hardiness and the need not to continue? Okay, go ahead. Yeah. Tell us about this.
Well, you see, when I lived in Australia, I did 10 years of experiments there. Well, actually 9 because 1 year I traveled around. Yeah, and the first 4 years in Perth, yeah, and then okay, you use year after year the same seeds, because I bought Eden seeds. Eden seeds is all the self seeding old varieties, yeah.
Heirlooms, right?
Yes, and so I was using that, and I noticed that each year, yeah, you would need less remedy. You had plants that gradually grew out of that miasmatic state, and also because I used organic growing, yeah, and the plants that I grew under inorganic conditions, they still were stronger, but a lot less so because they get the wrong kind of food. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So it depends on the way in which you grow, whether your plant is gaining sufficient after several generations to do without or not. And that you can see if you use chemical agriculture in general, you know, with chemical fertilizer, and you don't put any organic matter on the ground, then still these plants have the same type of problems. But that is also because the soil is not healthy. Yeah, so you can try to make the plant healthy, but that is not sufficient. The soil is the medium in which the plant lives. It is, so to speak, upside down. It's got its mouth in the ground and its stomach up in the air.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a good point, Kavi. Well, let me expand on that. As you're pointing out, basically the idea of using our basic knowledge of how to naturally, organically grow plants has, for the past 50 years, pretty much been thrown out the window by the corporations.
Yeah,
I'm reading two articles on NPR right now. One about the genetically modified canola, where between Canada and the United States, 98% of all canola, rapeseed oil used for oil crops, is now genetically modified. 90% of all corn in the United States is genetically modified.
Yeah.
And what's happening is that basically we are creating a vast monoculture, 88 million acres of these single varieties of crops, and we are starting to see resistance in these genetic, Mother Nature is always going to find a way to overcome.
Yeah,
no matter how fast we can breed, no matter how fast we can insert genes into any plant, Mother Nature, which is producing trillions and quadrillions of spores of fungi, billions of insects through numerous generations,
there's
going to be enough. Paul said- Rob,
no, it's true.
Carl Sagan,
billions and billions. Okay,
yeah.
But the point is that Mother Nature is always going to find a way to deal with these things, and what you're doing is opening up the entire commercial agricultural market to potential devastation, because just what happened with wheat rust, what happened with southern corn leaf blight back in the 70s. Is when you create a monoculture, even though it's been doing wonderful, all it takes is one bad year for the pathogen, a good year for the insect, a good year where they have the proper environmental conditions, they reproduce, they have resistance is overcome, you get what's known as a kickback of the population now finding, wow, I've got millions of acres of crops that I can now attack without any interruption. We, of course, will learn about it too late to come behind with the pesticides to be able to knock it out, and you wipe out the entire agriculture of a region. Inversely, I'm looking at another page talking about heirloom corn varieties. These are the old corn varieties that you could still buy from specialized growers.
We're going to have to get some.
There are thousands of them. These are done, as Kavi said, since the beginning of agriculture by selecting the traits that you want for a given region. And then you plant that corn, and in fact, if you have the proper soil, as he mentioned, you're providing natural nutrition, natural water retention in the soil. What this article is saying is that you are more likely to get a greater yield than you are from the GMO crops And because you're using heirloom varieties that have been out there for hundreds of years, tried and true, the chances of having a epidemic take place in your fields is tremendously reduced. Mm-hmm. So we're going to learn sooner or later about this stuff. Interestingly, these papers were published not by the Agronomy Society, not by Crop Science Society, but by the Ecological Society of America, okay,
yeah,
which is not tied into these corporations at all.
Which means what? Which means that if you are concerned that you have to speak out, get out there, talk to
well,
people
the fact,
who
the fact
can
is,
get
as
your
I, as
information
I, as
published?
As I tell all my students, and I don't want to be cynical, but I tell them, and they I said, you're going to have to learn this the hard way, is I quote the famous third episode of Indiana Jones, where the good philanthropist looks at Dr. Jones before he gets on the airplane taking off, and he says, remember, Dr. Jones, don't trust anybody. And, of course, he turned out to be a Nazi, okay? The point is that when you are dealing with modern science, more and more modern science is funded by private corporations.
Yes.
When you have agronomists and breeders and crop scientists who need to keep their labs open, need to fund their postdocs and graduate students with hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they go to the Monsantos, to the Syngentas, to the DuPonts and Dows, the large corporations that do this stuff, to provide the money, indeed, they are selling a part of their souls.
Absolutely.
Whereas when you talk to the Ecological Society of America, which doesn't get a cent from any of these companies and everything, they are under no compulsion to tell anything other than the truth of what they find out. Okay, so really, you know, I'm not trying to totally diss science, but you've got to be a very critical thinker when you read about these discoveries like Syngenta all over our newspapers here in North Carolina the other day. I have nothing against Syngenta. I have nothing against the science they do. But when their PR people come out with, quote, we have just revolutionized the growing of maize in drought-stricken areas, you better think twice about that. Because, indeed, the more people who believe it, the more money they make. They are not there to save the world. They are a publicly traded corporation. They are there to make money for their stockholders. That's not being cynical. It's not being jaded. Rather, it's being realistic to what the facts are.
Exactly. You know, and the same counts for pharmaceuticals and the
exactly.
medical field.
Right.
It's just everywhere. It's in every aspect of our life.
Exactly.
It's, you know, this hologram of what is going on with the different forces in nature, the ones who want to diversify and listen and communicate and get the truth out, and those people who are just for themselves, for the mighty dollar or for greed or for... self-serving interest. And
exactly.
Okay, so where do we go from here?
Well, as I said before, we can use homeopathy. Yeah. Like, for instance, Gina Tyler regularly goes to Bali. There the farmers use Roundup Ready soy. Ever since they started using that a couple of years back, the women are giving birth to babies where the cord is too short. It's only 30 centimeters instead of 70, 80. Yeah? And so when the baby comes out, the cord already breaks. Yeah? And so many have big problems afterwards. Yeah?
Right.
And the babies are small. Yeah, they are smaller than normal. And we see similar things in rats also. You know, when you feed rats GM corn, then GM soy, yeah, then they get these kind of things. Yeah, they get these kind of problems. And so
who is listening? Who is speaking out?
There are people who are listening, Debbie. Let me tell you what's happening, again, from a perspective of being an observer of this. I think that more and more organizations around the world are waking up to the fact that all the promises of the, quote, green revolution, okay, we're going to use more chemicals, more fertilizer, and more GMOs, and we're going to save the world, is in fact not working. It may be very efficient for Germany or for Australia or for the United States or for Canada to use these technologies because we have so much technology. We produce food on such a massive scale that indeed, at least for the short run, we can produce a tremendous amount of cheap food and do it efficiently. But we have to remember, the thing I always point out in my classes is the entire population of the United States represents 4% of the population of the planet. Include Canada, with the United States, you're now up to 4.8% of the entire population of the planet. Statistically, we don't even count, okay? The 80% of the people on this planet living in what we would call abject poverty, what they would call reality, indeed, this corporate technology that we, proprietary technology, that we are trying to sell to them and say this is going to save you, not only is being rejected, but more and more people are believing that, you know, it's the old adage, Christian adage that you read about in the New Testament, that don't give a man a fish, okay, which will feed him for a day, teach a man how to fish, okay, and you will save his life and his family and his culture. I think more and more people are beginning to understand that we have to adapt agriculture to the local conditions, use the local technology, use non-invasive treatments like Kavi is saying, such as homeopathy to improve the soil, to improve the vigor of the plant. And I really think that what you're seeing, and you know, I can't prove it yet, but I believe that there is a backlash that is forming internationally against this technology, saying, and you know, the word that we like to use is locavorism, okay, producing food locally under the conditions that are best suited, not simply a BT corn or BT soy or Roundup Ready this or that, taking one genome and saying plant it around the world and this will save everything. I believe more and more people are rejecting it. I believe the academic sector, on this show in the past, I talked about our Environmental Farming Center, where we can prove we can use none of that technology and on a per-acre basis grow more produce of a better quality than you can commercially. I think we're going to see more of that happening. I really do. And part of the reason, by the way, I don't want to make it sound like that everyone is enlightened. One of the things that is going to drive this reality is the price of oil, which is going up right now and will continue to go up, and also, as you mentioned before, the scarcity of water. Okay, when petroleum goes through the roof, when water becomes as scarce as petroleum, people are going to have to turn away from the old, from the new ways of doing things, which are very energy, water intensive, and find out ways of using the natural systems that we have used for thousands of years to sustain our civilization, and that has worked. So I'm encouraged. I mean, from my point of view, I think that there is going to be a new renaissance of natural organic food growing worldwide that is going to supplant an awful lot of this, quote, super technology that we see.
Yeah.
Kavi, do you want to talk about your book?
My book actually can teach him a whole lot of these things. I discuss in the introduction. I discuss the whole conundrum actually in which modern agricultural practice finds itself, and that is because they are always chasing the disease or the pest. But you know, the plant is having the problem, so you need to treat the plant. Yeah. And that is what they all forget. And as long as they chase the bug or the disease, they will be on a wild goose chase forever, and they keep selling things. Yeah, it is business-wise, it is almost fail-proof. Yeah, but if you look at the results, as Rob has already pointed out, you know, the so-called Green Revolution was started by a guy named Liebig. Yeah, von Liebig was a German, and he found out that actually these plants take up all these elements. So why don't we use the elements? Why, you know, he was trying to do one better on nature.
Right.
And so Liebig is written L-I-E-B-I-G, or in other words, lie big. Yeah, it was a big lie.
Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh!
Lie big.
Okay, yeah, I want
so
you to know
doing,
you have 10
big.
Minutes. You have 10 minutes, Kavi, to tell us all about your book and what we're going to learn in there. And we also have somebody in the chat room who has told us that no-dig gardening, soil, organic, super local food is stuff that's grown in your own backyard. And to watch, she's going to give us a link to a video, I think, about the collapse. When oil is too expensive, everything collapses. So thank you to Soul Connection, who has been listening to our show online today. And Kavi, tell us about what we're going to learn in your book.
And
then you can get the book from HWC on the link on the front page.
Yes. In the book, I explain first what are the principles of homeopathy that apply. Yeah, so we go through the points of totality of symptoms, single remedy, minimum dose, and no repetition until the dose has finished the action, which is usually between 3 to 5 months for a single dose. And then we give the remedies, and we speak about what the remedies are capable of producing and curing. Yeah, and so In the book, that was the first time I ever wrote about it, and I organized it like a regular Materia Medica, more or less. Yeah, that is the name of the remedy. That is the source where it comes from, and whether it is a trituration or a dilution. Yeah, and then we give a general description. We give a clinical description, what you can use it for, all the different problems. Yeah. And then we give a general description, where we first tell something about the plant itself, and how it's been used in, say, for instance, companion planting, or how it's been used in human medicine, and what are the correlations with plants. Yeah, and then after that, we give a chapter appearance. That is how it looks, And then we get the water needs. Yeah, does it need more water or not? And then we get the remedy list in relation to other remedies, because with the elements there is a difference in relationship. Yeah, as Rob can tell you. If you give too much phosphor, then you get a potassium problem, and vice versa.
Right.
But in the Materia Medica for humans, phosphor and potassium are friends. But in plants, they are enemies.
That's right.
Yeah, and so the relationships are different. Yeah.
Help to explain something, Kavi. Help me, being sort of a neophyte homeopathy person.
Yeah.
In your book, for example, in traditional agriculture, for example, here at my university, a land-grant university, our College of Agriculture, produces a handbook every year that's about 2 inches thick, okay?
Yeah.
And it says, okay, you're growing sweet potatoes.
Yes.
And if you have this bug on sweet potatoes, you will use A, parathione, B, diethanon, C, 7, things like that. Okay, that isn't the way homeopathy works. Correct me on that. We're not going after the bug as much as we're going after the symptom on the plant.
Yes.
Can you clarify that?
Yes, we are going after the symptom of the plant, and that's why I have the piece with the appearance. How does it look?
Right.
What are
right.
the symptoms? Is it dry? Is it thirsty? Yes or no? Yeah. How does it deal with nutrients? Nutrients may not be taken up, although you have given. Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, like, for instance, you find out this is potassium lack, and you give potassium, but it doesn't do it because there's too much phosphorus in the soil, so the potassium will not be taken up anyway.
Right.
Yeah, so what do you need to do then? Then you need to find a remedy that will solve that problem the best. And in this case, it is Kali Phos.
Right.
Yeah, and Kali Phos, all of a sudden, these two things are brought into balance. Yeah, it is like the change is something, I think, in the fauna underground, yeah, in the microfauna, you have bacteria that all of a sudden are activated by the remedy and begin to release the potassium. And I think that they are kept asleep, so to speak, by the too much phosphorus.
Right. So,
yeah.
So in your book, in your book, again, being a new user, I mean, I grow a garden every year with Demi,
yeah.
And if we see certain symptoms on there, we're going to be able to use your book like a materia medica,
yes,
to be able to track
back
those symptoms
repertory.
And find out, like
in
a repertory.
Back is a repertory, and
okay.
There you can look up the symptoms, first on the roots, then the stem, then the leaves,
uh-huh.
The branches, and so forth, flowers, and the fruit.
Excellent.
Yeah. And so we
right.
go through the whole plant, and then, of course, we have the soil, the nutrient problems. Yeah.
Right.
And then we write down the problem. Yeah, the leaves are getting brown, and it's not yet fall. Yeah. So,
right.
Hey, well, what is that? Why are they getting brown? Well, they are getting brown. This is a dry rot, or it is a wet rot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Or it is
right.
this bacterial disease, or it is this viral one, yeah, anthracnose, or Pseudomonas or so.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So all the things can be found there, and then behind that is given a list of remedies, and then you go look in the book which one fits your case closest.
Right.
Okay.
Very interesting.
So that makes
we're so honored to have you with us, Kavi and Dr. Bob, on the show to talk about the whole spectrum of what's going on today in our environment, which affects all of us, and the steps that we can take for switching over to a more natural way of living. And to preserve our water, our air, and our land. We've just about finished. My phone is ringing, and I want to thank all of our guests. If you just want to say your goodbyes and wish everybody a happy holiday season and a good new year, I don't know whether – I don't think we're going to have a show next week. We're going to be all away next week, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Well,
Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah.
Happy
Kwanzaa.
Happy Festivus.
Happy Festivus.
Everybody?
Happy Festivus for the rest of us.
Yes. And then we'll see each other beginning next year then.
Right.
Okay. In January.
2011 is going to be good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Looking forward to 2011.
Yes. The best is yet to come.
Sending out love to everybody.
The best is yet
okay.
to come.
Okay.
Best is yet to come.
Great. Going to be a good year.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to How Homeopathy Helps Grow Great Gardens with co-hosts Kaviraj Vaikuthanath and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to get some sunshine and light up your life in your garden.